Thanks, Catherine. Well, welcome. My name is Carrie Carter, and I am so glad to be here with you tonight talking about the Enneagram. For me personally, this has really changed how I see myself and how I see those around me, and so I hope that it is helpful to you as well. And you may be here tonight because you're curious about the Enneagram, or you may have only heard about the Enneagram from your friend that dragged you here, because if I know one thing, I know that there are Enneagrammers and there are Enneacrammers, right? Who are like, you will like this. I don't care if you want to. You're gonna like it and love it as much as I do. Anybody here with one of those people tonight? No, don't raise your hand. You might have to find a new ride home. But no matter how familiar or unfamiliar you are with the Enneagram, I'm glad you're here tonight. We have a ton of information. Hopefully you're going to learn a lot. If you don't have a little booklet, you need one. Otherwise, you're going to be completely lost. So the books are back there. If you don't have one, jump up, grab one, and that will help you as we go through this material. Let me say a quick prayer, and then we're going to jump right into the material. God, thank you for tonight. Thank you for these women who have gathered here to learn more about themselves and about you. And I just pray that you would open our ears and our minds, but more importantly, our hearts, God. Show us how we can love you better and how we can love others in a healthier way, God. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, so get your pens ready. Let's get started with 10 facts about the Enneagram. Okay, first, what is this thing? The Enneagram is a personality tool that just explains why we think, feel, behave, and interact with the world the way that we do. Because we all have our own unique way of understanding and perceiving the world. Yeah? I hope that's not news to you. If it is, we might need to meet afterwards. But my dad's best friend says it this way. He says, we're all bizarre in our own way. That's pretty good, right? But we call this way of perceiving things our personality. And you're born with certain tendencies, and those tendencies are further shaped and solidified during your childhood years. And they become this mechanism, we'll see, for how you both avoid your deepest fears and try to achieve your deepest desires. And it operates mostly subconsciously in what we're going to see are very predictable patterns. And the Enneagram is just a map that explains those patterns. Now, I'm sure you're probably familiar with other personality tools. There's a million of them out there. Myers-Briggs, the DISC. You can be a lion, beaver, otter, golden retriever, all those kinds of things. And they can all be helpful, but one of the things that I really think sets the Enneagram apart is that while most personality tools tell you what you do and how you behave, the Enneagram goes deeper. It looks at your internal motivations and why you do what you do. Because when you understand the why, it's easier to change the what, right? I've got three teenagers, and when my kids were younger, well, I mean, who am I kidding? Even now, and me included, if they're hungry or really tired, they melt down, right? And so when they were little, especially, I could either focus on changing that behavior, or I could give them something to eat and fix the cause of the behavior. So the Enneagram really helps us to see the drivers and the motivators of our personality so that we can make changes to function and relate in a healthier way. Number three, Enneagram is a weird word. Ennea just means nine, and gram just means picture or drawing. Okay, so you can see we have a diagram of 9 points arranged in a circle and connected by some lines. And we're going to come back to parts of that in the next session. But those 9 points represent the 9 different types, personality types, in the Enneagram. And people have assigned names to the types, and everybody's names are a little bit different, but here's the deal. You'll hear me say, I'm a one. Some people call one the perfectionist. Well, that kind of hurts my feelings. It might be true. No comments from people in here that know me, but I'm not crazy about that title. So we use numbers because they don't come with the bias that names do. So you're going to hear me say, I'm a one, she's a six, you're a five, those kinds of things. Number four, you're going to have some of all the types, but you're going to have one dominant type. So as you listen tonight, don't be confused if you recognize parts of yourself in all nine types, some more than others. But eventually you're going to find your main type, which is the one that motivates and drives your behavior more than the others, especially when you're under stress. But don't let it throw you off when you identify with qualities of several of the types. Number five, the numbers of the types are arbitrary. There's no better or worse. One is not greater than five. Two is not better than nine. The numbers are arbitrary. The best type is the one that is healthy, because as you'll see, all types have their positive qualities and they all have their negative tendencies. Number six, only you can truly identify your type. You're born with a dominant type. It's set by about age five and it doesn't change. But because it requires a lot of self-awareness, you can't accurately identify your type till your late teens, early 20s, okay? So trying to do so before then can actually cause more harm than good. So if you've got little kids, don't be trying to type them. If you've got a 13-year-old boy like I do, it's going to take him a little while, okay? So that's going to be your tendency, is to try to type your spouse, your best friend, your coworker, and your kids, and I'm telling you, don't do it. You can guess, but the problem is, even with the people that we know the very best, they only see what we let them see. And the Enneagram is based on your internal motivations. And let me tell you, very few people, probably nobody but you, knows what your internal motivations are. We can have the same behavior for different reasons. And so only you can type yourself. You have to be the one to find your type. So I really want to challenge you, especially if the Enneagram is new to you tonight, put all those other people aside and just think about your own self. Number seven, the most accurate test is only 70% accurate at best. So some of you may have come tonight and you took a test, and it told you that you were a certain number. And here's what I want you to do with that. I want you to hold that very loosely. And I want you to say, this might be who I am. It's really hard to measure yourself on the Enneagram with a test, because it's hard to measure your internal motivations. Lay on top of that the fact that a lot of us don't really know ourselves that well. It's hard to take a test and it be accurate. Some authors would say, don't take a test. So if you've come tonight and you haven't taken a test, great, that's fine too. You don't have to take a test. But if you do take a test, realize it's not very accurate. Some authors would say 50 or 60%. That's not very good odds, okay? So my point is, the test is optional. Take it or leave it. What I do want you to hear is, spend some time. This is a process. Chances are you're not going to come out of tonight 100% sure what your number is. And if you are, my guess is that you're going to second guess that in the future. Okay, so be patient with the process. Observe yourself. Sit with it for a while. Number eight, infinite variety exists within each type. And you will not identify with every detail about your type. As I've started talking, you may be thinking, well, how in the world can everybody fit into nine types? I mean, I don't really like that. I don't want you to put me in a box. But there are so many layers to the Enneagram, and I'm telling you tonight, we are gonna just swipe the surface We're not even going to scratch it. We're just going to swipe it. And there's almost endless variety when you begin to explore all the layers of the Enneagram. But in spite of a variation that occurs within each type, when you look at each type, you will find some common qualities. Let me illustrate what I mean. When I say something is blue, I could mean that it looks like this, blue. Or we could say it might be either of these two. Those are both blue, but they're different than the first one. But really, I could say, pick something out of here. Those are all blue, right? You see how they're all different, but we would call them all blue. The Enneagram is similar. No two people of the same type are going to look exactly alike, but they will definitely have some basic qualities that are the same. Make sense? Number 9, the Enneagram allows for changes in our personality under stress and insecurity. So I want you to think for a minute about your personality. Is it always the same in every situation, every day? No. Each of us is a unique combination of personality types that's dynamic, meaning we change. We change from day to day. We change with life circumstances and life experiences. We change based on our mood. We change based on the situation that we're in and the people that we're around. And one of the amazing things about the Enneagram is it allows for that change, and it even explains how your behavior and your thinking might change when you're healthy and how it might change when you're under stress. And we're going to come back to that in our next session. Number 10, you interact with 5 numbers on the Enneagram. First, you have your main type. Remember, we said that's what drives and motivates your behavior. Numbers 2 and 3 are called your wings. Those are the numbers on the circle that are on either side of your main type. And you can draw from those numbers. They serve to just add variety to your main type, but they're not going to be your drivers. Some people pull from one side more than the other. Some people pull from both. It's not a huge thing, but you need to know that those are another layer that add to the variety of your personality. The 4th number is the number that you move to under stress. The 5th one, the number that you move to in security. And again, we're going to come back to those. Right now, though, I want you to be thinking about that first number, your main type, because that's the first order of business with the Enneagram, is finding your main type. Okay, so we have some basic information about the Enneagram. Why in the world would we study the Enneagram? Why would I have spent hours and hours? Why would you be here tonight? Well, first, understanding our Enneagram number and really our design is one of the ways we can answer the question, how is God uniquely imaged in me? Genesis 1:27 tells us that God created man in his own image. And so whether you realize it or not, whether you believe in God or not, you are created in his image. You are created to reflect him. We were each created to both experience and express God in a unique way. The God of the universe longs to have an individual relationship with you. And so some of you in this room don't believe that you really have anything to offer. You don't believe that God's given you gifts, and he's given you abilities, and he's given you a beautiful design. But I need you to know that God doesn't make mistakes, that he has a plan for you, a good plan. And my prayer for you is that as we process through this information tonight, you will begin to see the beauty in how God has designed you. And that he has specifically designed you with a purpose in mind. But because we live in a broken world full of sin, sin has broken that beautiful design. And that leads us to our next reason to study the Enneagram. And that's as we recognize the unhealthy patterns of our personality, we can consciously choose to act feel, or think in a different way. I heard this statement that I think really nails it when we think about personality. And it's this: the eye can see everything but itself. Think about that for a minute. I don't think we can truly know and understand the depth and power of God's grace until we know and understand the depth and depravity of our own nature. And so we're really going to focus in more on this in our next session, but the Enneagram helps us to see unhealthy patterns that we've maybe never been aware of. And then we can see our need for God in a new way. Then we can make a conscious choice to change our perceptions, to change our behaviors, to change our thought patterns, instead of following those automatic tendencies of our personality. Number three, we can use the Enneagram as a tool to alert us when we're moving in a positive direction or a negative direction. Once we begin to be aware of our personality and its patterns, the Enneagram kind of becomes like that rumble strip on the side of the highway. You ever hit that thing? It's kind of like, whoa, wake up. You're headed off towards a ditch somewhere you don't want to be. Get back on course. That's what the Enneagram can become for us. And so we can also begin to recognize when we're doing well. But when we begin to see those warning signs that the Enneagram provides, we can stop, get back on course, and choose to do something different. Four, we gain understanding, compassion, and appreciation for the way God has designed us and others. Like I said, the quote about the eye, we tend to be blind to our own design, but if we're honest, we tend to be frustrated and kind of annoyed with the design of others, right? Especially when they're really different from us. But the Enneagram helps us to see both the beauty and the brokenness, first in our own design and then in the design of those around us. This quote from Joey Shuey that speaks on the Enneagram, she nails it, I think. She says, pain in a relationship typically comes from a lack of understanding. That's so true. I mean, I think about that in my own life. And then the Enneagram helps us to grow in our capacity to really lay aside our own preferences for the good of others. It helps give us tools to love and honor the people around us. I love the New Living Translation of Ephesians 4:2. It says this: always be humble and gentle. Be patient with each other. Here's the good part. Making allowance for others' faults. Yeah, that one kind of gets me. Making allowance for others' faults because of your love. Understanding allows frustration to give way to compassion. Finally, before we get into the types, I want to give you some cautions about the Enneagram. First, the Enneagram is not an offensive tool to create guilt or shame for yourself or for others. Every positive type has a negative part as well. And you're going to see that, and you're going to feel it as we go through them. What we're going for is awareness, this awakening and awareness to how you think, feel, and act. There are stages when you're learning about the Enneagram. You'll feel them tonight briefly, because we've got to move so quickly. But the first stage is, wow, this thing is cool. How did somebody figure this out? And then the second one is, yeah, I changed my mind. I don't want to learn about this anymore. I don't like these negative things that you're telling me about. And finally, you reach this place of humility and surrender, where you realize that we all have weaknesses, but we don't have to be bound by them. What I don't want for you to do is get stuck in that second phase and feel guilty about the way that you think, feel guilty about the way that you perceive the world. But I'm warning you, those feelings are coming. So be ready. And let them just push you to take the next step of change instead of drowning you in guilt. Romans 8:1 tells us there is no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. Isn't that good? And so if God, who knows our deepest, darkest, internal self that we were talking about, if he says there's no condemnation for us, if we're in him, then maybe we can start to believe that ourselves. So as you see your areas of brokenness tonight, invite God in. He longs to meet you there. He longs to meet you there. On the flip side, the next thing is don't over-identify with a number and begin to use it as an excuse for your behavior. You're not locked into a number. You're not just a five. I'm not just a one. And too bad you didn't clean that up correctly, because I'm a one and now I'm going to be mad at you. Don't do that. Okay? Don't stay stuck in certain patterns and not ever try to break out of them. You need to know that you have those tendencies, but you also need to be able to grow out of those tendencies. Become a healthier person. Next, don't over-elevate the test or the Enneagram in general. The Enneagram has become popular in a lot of circles today. It's become controversial in a lot of church circles. And so what I want us all to remember is that the Enneagram is not the destination of the journey. It's a tool that we use along the way, one of many tools. And I really like what author Suzanne Stabile says about this. She says, the Enneagram's not doctrine, and it's not dogma, it's just true. But some people have taken the Enneagram and they've turned it into doctrine. And they've turned it into a religion of sorts that is way more about self than about Jesus. And so as we look at things that are popular in the culture, what we want to make sure we're doing is that we're using the Bible to interpret the culture, not using the culture to interpret the Bible. So I want you to use discernment as you go out from tonight. If you choose to dive deeper into this information, you need to know you can find some really crazy stuff out there. And we're going to point you towards some resources later that we know and we trust. Finally, the Enneagram is not a description of who you want to be or who you wish you were, but it's who God created you to be. Jeremiah 1:5, God says, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you." It's easy to look at the types and say, I want to be that one. But God created you exactly how he wants you to be. And remember, he does not make mistakes. Okay, still with me? It's a lot of information. We're just getting to the good part. A couple of final things before we jump into the types. As you look to find or confirm your type, if you have an idea already, it's helpful to think back over your life. Don't just think about the season that you're in now. Think back to your late teens, your early 20s. Some of you are lucky and you're not going to have to think very hard. Some of us have to think a little harder because it's been a while. But look at your life as a whole, not just who you are now. And as we go through each type, remember, you will hear things you identify with in each type, and you might just put a little check mark by those as we go through. Then it's also helpful to eliminate the things you know you're not. So you might put a little X by those as we go through. Remember, you're looking for the driving force behind your behavior. Ready? All right, type one is the reformer. They are motivated by the need to live the right way and to improve themselves and the world around them. They're principled, purposeful, self-controlled, conscientious, and they have a fear of being wrong, bad, evil or irresponsible. Their desire is to be good and to have integrity and balance. And the strength that they bring to the table is quality. Healthy ones reflect God's goodness. They do the right thing even when they don't feel like it. If you have a kid who's a crazy rule follower, they might be a one. Ones see how things could be. They have this desire to improve the world in various ways. They like for things to be perfect and right. They love systems and they love efficiency, and they probably have a specific way that they want you to load the dishwasher. Anybody? They see mistakes in themselves and in the world not because they're searching for them, but because they just kind of pop out at them. Ones are very practical, and they always see how you can improve things, and they like fairness and justice. Number two is the helper. They're motivated by the need to be loved and valued and the need to express their positive feelings towards others. They're generous, loving, nurturing, selfless. They fear being unloved and unwanted. Their desire is to be loved and wanted just for who they are. And the strength that they bring to the table is service. Healthy twos reflect God's love. They are the ones who take care of the rest of us. They show love by meeting the needs of others. Needs don't scare them. They're the ones who hear you are sick and they bring you dinner. They're the good hostesses, and they're warm and they're personable. One word of caution here about type two. A lot of women in the church, in the South, and in the baby boomer generation will mistype themselves as twos because that's what the culture has taught them a good Southern godly woman looks like. So be careful that you're looking at your motivations as we go through these and not others' expectations. Number three, the achiever is motivated by the need to be productive, to achieve success, and to avoid failure. You're going to feel some overlap in these numbers. Some of them become a real fine line in motivation. The three is adaptable, industrious, driven, and goal-oriented. They fear being worthless, a failure, unimpressive, and exposed. They desire to feel valuable for being themselves without having to perform, and their strength that they bring is delivery. They will get it done. Threes reflect the hope that God brings because they see what could be. And so they're the ones who are constantly setting goals of achieving, and they're constantly doing it. They get it done. Many times they're the role model we all wish we could be because it seems like they've got it all together. They're succeeding at everything. This is the kid in your son's class at school who's captain of the football team, straight A student, president of student council, teacher's pet, goes to church every Sunday and probably every Wednesday. Okay, that's the three. They're typically friendly and optimistic, and they want to contribute their stellar abilities to affect the world. They need to achieve and leave their mark. They want to make a difference. They want to be remembered. Number four is the individualist. They're motivated by the need to experience and express their feelings, to be understood, and avoid being ordinary. They're sensitive, creative, introspective, and authentic. And they fear being inadequate, misunderstood, flawed, or mundane. Don't tell a four you're going to go to Walmart and buy the generic lampshade. Okay? They don't like that. Their desire is to find themselves and their unique significance. And their strength is creativity. Fours reflect God's creativity. They're the deep thinkers. They're the creative dreamers of the group. They want to be uniquely different, and they're okay with exploring their feelings, even if they're negative feelings. Fours can be self-expressive and kind of edgy, kind of out there, or they can be very refined and cultured. When they're healthy, fours have an incredible way of seeing the beauty in simple, everyday things. and they help others see that as well. Now, not all fours are artsy, but we do find a lot of fours in artistic endeavors. Artists, songwriters, writers, some of our worship guys on staff are fours, because they're not afraid to contemplate deeply. They're not afraid to sit in that emotion and to ask those questions and give voice to those things. They want meaning and depth, and they deeply desire to be genuinely and authentically themselves. They don't focus so much on achievements and success. Their desire is to make a difference, to be valuable, to have an impact. Number five is the investigator. They're motivated by the need to know and understand, to be self-sufficient, and to avoid looking foolish. They're perceptive and innovative, analytical and curious. They fear obligation, incompetence, being overwhelmed or invaded. And their desire is to be capable and competent. The strength that they bring is insight. Fives are the cerebral thinkers of the group, and they reflect God's wisdom. They're the ones who like to master subjects and study random things in detail. When I was growing up in the sixth or seventh grade, one of my best guy friends decided he wanted to learn Russian. I mean, what 13-year-old boy decides he wants to learn Russian and does it? That's a five. Fives thrive on competency. They're insightful, they value knowledge and understanding, and they spend time collecting and developing ideas. So they have a very active mental world. Many of our best thinkers are fives. And surely the person that came up with the Enneagram had to be a five. I don't know how any of the rest of us could have done it. Number six is the loyalist. They're motivated by fear and the need for security. They're caring, analytical, responsible, and dependable. They have a fear of fear itself. They fear uncertainty. They fear of being blamed, alone, or abandoned. And they have a desire to have security, support, and guidance. The strength that they bring to the table is vigilance, and I want to define that for you. Vigilance is keeping careful watch for possible danger or difficulties. That's the six. Sixes reflect God's faithfulness because they're very loyal. They have strong convictions, and they hold to them without wavering. They make fierce advocates and supporters of those in need. And if you can get them to like you, decide to like you, they make great friends because they're super loyal. They are in for life. Healthy sixes have strong work ethics, and they're faithful and they're conscientious in what they do. So they also make great consultants because they can see ahead. They can see possible pitfalls or problems. Number seven is the enthusiast. They're motivated. Yeah, we got somebody back there. See, only the seven would do that. Only the seven would do that. Seven's the enthusiast. They're motivated by the need to be happy, enjoy life, avoid suffering and pain, and contribute to the world. They're spontaneous, they're versatile, optimistic, and fun-loving. They fear being incomplete, bored, disappointed, or in emotional pain. And they desire to be fully satisfied and content. The strength that they bring to the table is vision. Sevens are the fun ones of the bunch. They reflect God's joy. And they love new experiences, and they bring energy, and they bring versatility. Sevens like a fast pace. They like to always be moving, and they tend to be pretty spontaneous. They're usually adventurous. They're always kind of looking for that next exciting thing, afraid they might miss out on something. We all need a seven around to keep the rest of us from being kind of boring. Number eight is the protector. They are motivated by the need to be self-reliant and avoid feeling weak or dependent. They're self-confident, they're decisive, they're resourceful and assertive. They fear being controlled, powerless, harmed, or humiliated. And they have a desire to protect themselves. Their strength is drive. Eights are charismatic and persuasive. They are tough and tenacious protectors who reflect God's power. They like to be in charge, and they are not afraid of confrontation. Conflict sends me the other way. Eights, bring it on. They're ready. They don't mind it. They're strong and passionate. They're intense. A healthy eight is going to be a great defender of others. They're driven, and they're a fantastic trailblazer because they don't mind all the scrapes and scratches that come along with blazing a new trail. They don't mind the struggle and the strain of clearing a new path. Number nine is the peacemaker. They are motivated by the need to keep the peace and avoid conflict. And here's the key, both internally and externally. They're pleasant, patient, agreeable, and steady. They fear being in conflict. They like to be comfortable. They fear being uncomfortable. They fear being overlooked and alone. And they desire harmony, stability, and peace of mind. And that's the strength that they bring to the table, harmony. Nines are fantastic to have around. They go with the flow. They're not demanding. They're steady. They're easygoing. They usually get along with everyone, and they're accepting of others, which means that they're well-liked by almost everyone. They are the least judgmental of the types, and they can see multiple perspectives. Nines reflect God's peace and his harmony. Now, that's a lot of information. We're going to continue to process it through the night, and it's going to become clearer. But also, working with this material truly becomes a lifelong process. I don't know if the person who invited you here tonight told you about that commitment that you're making. But it is. It's a lifelong process of learning more about ourselves and the people around us. We're never done learning and growing. Now, if you are completely lost as your type, that's okay too. Don't worry. The process of working through that and learning what makes you tick and what drives you is an extremely valuable process. I think that people who can nail themselves real easily sometimes miss out because they don't have to go through the process of learning more about who they are. And you may have identified with several of the things that I said for several of the types. Remember, that's okay. Just remember, you're looking for your internal motivations. Because as different types, we can have the same behavior, but a different motivation. And that's where the Enneagram lives, in the why behind what you do. All right, we're going to take a 10-minute break. There's going to be a timer up here, so you know when we're about ready to start again. Get some more to eat. Take a trip to the bathroom if you need to, and we'll see you back here in 10 minutes. Well, let's get started back. We want to be respectful of your time and get you out of here on time tonight. Come on back in, find your seat, and we'll get going again. So if you're still completely lost, it's okay. Don't worry. Don't panic. Depending on what type you are, you ones want to get it figured out. You want it to be right. You threes have to figure it out before anybody else does. It's the threes that are laughing so hard. Your nines are like, I don't know. I really just don't know. But this session, things should become a little bit clearer for you because the Enneagram, I hate to say it, it really defines you by your negative tendencies. Yeah, we got some groans from this half of the room. But really, it can help you be real with yourself and show you the places where you tend to look to your own strength and your own strategies as you navigate life. So many times we're afraid of talking about our weaknesses, right? We're afraid of admitting to our struggles, but the Enneagram really helps give us language around that, and it opens the door to this conversation about why we get stuck in certain areas. And so in this session, we're going to talk about what it looks like for each type to be under stress, and then how we can move to a healthier place. Now, being stressed or being secure can have a lot of different meanings. But tonight, because I want you to remember, your personality is this automatic mechanism. Okay? It's how we seek to fulfill what? Our deepest desires and to avoid our deepest fears. And so as we process the Enneagram, when we use the term stress, we use that to mean that we're functioning from an unhealthy place where we're depending on our own personality, which really is just our flesh's strategy for coping with life. It's our own strength, it's our own power to avoid those fears and achieve those desires. And when we use the term security, we're talking about functioning from a healthier place. And we can swing naturally between the two a lot of times, just kind of like your mood swings back and forth. But if we can begin to use the tool of the Enneagram to become aware of those places that need to change, then we can consciously choose. We have an opportunity to intentionally choose to do something different instead of just following those automatic tendencies and being governed by them. So I have to tell you, a few weeks ago, it was a Saturday, and we were just working around the house, and, you know, it's one of those days, I hadn't washed my hair in a while, you know, you're kind of thinking, I can make it one more day, come on. I mean, dry shampoo and dark hair just doesn't go well together, right? Can I get an amen from my dark-headed sisters out there? And so on top of that, we'd been working around the house, and I'm just kind of wearing an old T-shirt and leggings, and, I mean, I'll admit, I was looking pretty scary, okay? And one of my kids comes in and says, Mom, I need to go to Walmart. I'm like, okay, we can go to Walmart. Let me run and put some different shoes on. So I go to the back, and I look in the mirror, and I kind of go, whoa. I wasn't quite expecting that. And I don't know if you've ever stooped this low, but I looked at myself in the mirror and I literally asked myself this question: am I decent enough to go to Walmart? Walmart, guys. I mean, that's how bad it was. I mean, you've seen the people of Walmart pages, right? On Facebook and the pictures that people post. That's literally my standard at this moment, and I'm going through those pictures in my mind, and then I start thinking about all those pictures, and I think, I'm looking pretty good. I mean, Walmart's going to be fine. And so we head off to Walmart. And so I want you to think about the Enneagram as that mirror. It allows us to take things that had been subconscious that we haven't seen before, our thoughts, our feelings, and our motives, and we can become consciously aware of them. When I was little, I used to watch the cartoon G.I. Joe. Anybody remember that one? We got a bunch of young folks in here. But back then, cartoons used to contain some kind of a lesson. They don't anymore, but they used to. And so at the end of G.I. Joe, they would kind of recap the lesson, and G.I. Joe would say, now you know, and knowing is half the battle. Anybody? Okay, thank you. And so the first step is you have to look in that mirror and you have to know what needs to change. When I looked in that mirror on that Saturday, there was a lot of things that needed to change. But just looking in the mirror doesn't actually fix anything. Remember what G.I. Joe says, knowing is half the battle. Because there's a second question that we have to ask, and that is, am I willing to change? Because insight is easy. That knowing part is easy, but growth is hard. Change takes effort and it takes energy. We don't like to change. As you try to change, you will feel your personality resist. It will say, no, we have used these strategies for a long time, and they've gotten us this far. And when you try to push those aside, you're going to feel more insecure. You're going to feel more out of control. You're going to feel more scared because those old strategies are safe and they're secure. Even if they're unhealthy and they don't work, they're your normal. So how do we grow with the Enneagram? How do we change? First, you've got to recognize what you're doing. You've got to become conscious of the subconscious. And as we become more aware of ourselves, we become less stuck in that defensive structure of our personality. And we become, it's weird, you become almost this objective observer of what you're doing. And you kind of go, huh, I wonder why I do that. And so the healthier you are, the less attached you become to your personality. So be honest with yourself. As you process this, own your behavior, all of it. The good things and the bad. But also begin to see that you have an opportunity not to follow that automatic pattern that your type wants to dictate. Secondly, have compassion for yourself and for others. Not guilt, not shame. When you begin to recognize those around you are moving into their stress behaviors, instead of being annoyed by that behavior that's irritated you for your entire marriage, that your roommate does, that drives you crazy, it alerts you to the fact that they're not in a very healthy place. And you can do your part to love and encourage them and respond with compassion and support rather than frustration. We can love others the way that they receive love. Now, remember what I said, the Enneagram is not a tool designed for guilt and shame. And you're going to have to remind yourself of that as we go through these next sessions of information. It's really not very fun to see your shortcomings and your unhealthy behaviors. Richard Rohr, who is considered to be kind of one of the modern fathers of the Enneagram, if you will, he puts it this way. He says, before the truth sets you free, it tends to make you miserable. But don't be afraid to press into unhealth. We said that the Enneagram is a mirror, and sometimes it can feel like one of those magnifying mirrors. You got one of those? I don't. On purpose. I don't recommend them. You look in those things and you're like, whoa, that is somebody else. Third, ask God to help you choose to do something different. So I'm going to give you all this information, and at the end, you're going to kind of go, okay, what do I do with this? How do I actually use this? We're going to talk more about that, but there's going to be this feeling that rises up in you that wants to try harder and do better. But isn't that what you've been trying to do for those all however many years you've been alive, is trying to do better? It doesn't work, guys. It doesn't work. We have to depend on God and His strength to change. All right, I want to quickly touch on the structure of the Enneagram. And if you're really familiar with the Enneagram, you're going to be a little frustrated with me tonight because we're having to leave off a lot of stuff. Remember we said the Enneagram is a map that allows for the dynamic nature of your personality, how you change when you're under stress and when you're feeling more secure. And that the Enneagram explains and even almost predicts this behavior. So you can see on the diagram that we have the 9 points connected by a series of lines. And those lines have meaning, and they really form the map of the Enneagram that I keep talking about. And when you're under stress or you're secure, you move from your type along those lines in a certain way, and you take on qualities of another number. Now, I'm not going to get into the technical details of what number goes where and why and all that, because we just don't have time, and I'll just confuse the heck out of you. But what I want you to know is that this exists because it's a huge part of the Enneagram. It's a huge part of what makes the Enneagram different from other tools. And you may decide you want to go and read and learn a little bit about it on your own. But what I am going to do tonight, I'm going to leave out a bunch of the technical details, but I'm going to describe to you what it looks like. We're not going to exactly talk about the how, but I'm going to give you a picture of what it looks like when these types move to other numbers under stress and insecurity. I think that will be more helpful to you. So again, if you know your type, that's great. And if you don't, that's fine too. Just look for behaviors and patterns that you identify with. Again, you might want to use your little check mark by things you identify with and your X besides things you don't. Okay, number one, the reformer. Under stress, a usually methodical one becomes irritable and irrational. They become critical, controlling, and judgmental. And their red flag is a sense of personal obligation. When I'm not doing well at home, and I'm stressed and I'm frustrated, what I start thinking to myself is, I'm the only one who ever does anything around here. And when they do something or experience something, they're always asking themselves, was that perfect? Did I make any mistakes? And they long to hear, you are good. Ones have this internal critic in their head. And a lot of times we don't even realize it because we assume everybody has that in their head. But I'm learning people don't always have this voice in their head. And it says, well, you could have done that. Yeah, you did a fine job, but you should have tweaked that a little bit. They focus on flaws and mistakes, injustice, and fairness. They struggle with accepting criticism. Ones have a hard time apologizing and admitting that they were wrong. Ones can be nicknamed the constant improvers. When I heard that, I was like, ding, 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 ding. Nobody likes to be constantly improved, ones, even if your heart is good. Ones feel the gap between what they think should be and what is. They constantly feel that gap, and what that leads to is guilt that is truly expressed as anger, but many times comes out as resentment, because to be angry would be wrong, and ones don't want to be wrong. Ones tend to see only what they're not, and they need to be reminded of what they are. So how do ones move to a healthier place, and what does that look like? Well, critical ones, when they become healthier, they become more spontaneous and more joyful. When they can let go of the belief that it's up to them to right all these wrongs that they see in the world, and when they can let go of having to live up to this standard of perfection. Their healing attitude says, I do not need to be perfect. And I am loved despite my imperfections. And their mindset for growth says it's okay to make mistakes. Ones have to learn to relax and learn that the fate of the world is not resting solely on their shoulders. They need to be open to letting others help, even if it means they don't do it exactly how you would have done it. They've got to learn to flex on their standards and their expectations. one's pursuit of perfection can ruin them and their relationships. And they have to begin to recognize when their standards and their criticism becomes alienating instead of helpful. And then they have to learn to identify and process their anger and frustration towards those unmet standards and unmet expectations of both themselves and others. Ones, you can do your very best, and sometimes it's just not good enough. Nobody's perfect, and we all need the grace of Jesus. So ones have got to learn to let go of anger and pursue grace, both for self and for others. Two, the helper under stress. They become aggressive, combative, martyr-like, manipulative, and indirect. Now, some of those words are contradictions. Their red flag is people-pleasing. And they're always asking, do people like and want me? And what they really long to hear is, you are loved, period. Twos can either become needy and overly accommodating because they need to be needed. And when they get stressed, they tend to push down and deny their own needs, and they continue to push forward in serving others. And they can burn themselves out. Twos aren't bothered by the needs of other people. They can serve somebody else all day long. But they have a very hard time voicing their own needs and giving themselves permission to take care of themselves. When twos begin to fear that they are, in fact, unwanted and unloved, then they tend to become pushy, overbearing, and even manipulative. They are going to insert themselves. They are going to be loved by you. They can become very passive-aggressive. But when they shift to security, an overextended two becomes more self-nurturing and more emotionally aware. They let go of that belief that they're not allowed to take care of themselves and to have their own needs. And their healing attitude says, I am loved, even when nobody needs my help. And their mindset for growth says it's okay to have limits. It's important for twos to realize that love is not a limited commodity. That having good boundaries and saying no when you need to does not equal selfishness. And it's helpful for twos to think about their motives for doing things. Are they trying to win someone over so that they can feel love? Is that why they're serving that person? They also need to realize that they're not the only person that's able to meet all of these needs that they see. Because twos walk in a room and they can read needs like a book. They just know. It's important for twos to be okay with allowing people around them to suffer the consequences of their decisions. If you're a mom and you're a two, that is huge for you. You have to learn how to discern when your helping is actually hurting. And so a great question for twos to ask themselves is, what is mine to do? Every need in this room is not yours to do. But ask yourself, what is mine to do? And then twos must learn to voice their own needs and ask for help when they need it. Three is the achiever, and under stress, a normally driven three becomes disengaged and apathetic, deceptive, superficial, and self-promoting. And they can be workaholics. Their red flag is equating value with success, thinking that they have to be the best. If you're a student and you got a 98 on a test and somebody else got a 99, you're disappointed. If you're a three, they're always asking themselves, was that successful? And they long to hear, you're loved simply for being you, simply for who you are, not for your achievements. When threes begin to shift to this unhealthy place, they drive themselves to achieve. for status and for attention. They need to look the best, have the best, do the best, and be the best. They struggle with deceit many times when they're unhealthy. And they have a hard time being genuine because they are so set on having and maintaining this image in order to feel worth. They have a very hard time with failure. Threes will absolutely die trying. Their goals are ever moving. If you're married to a three and he says, I'm going to go back to school and get my master's degree, you better set yourself up for a PhD. Because once they achieve something, the goal moves and they've got to achieve the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, and it never stops. There's no satisfaction for threes because as hard as you try, you cannot earn self-worth. That's a gift to you from God. How do threes become more healthy? When that unhealthy, self-focused three moves towards health, they become more cooperative and considerate of others. They let go of that belief that their values dependent on their successes and on the opinion of other people. And their healing attitude says, I'm loved for who I am, not for what I achieve. And the mindset that they need to have to grow says, it's okay to be myself, even if I'm not the best. Threes have to become aware of when they are turning on an image for someone rather than being authentically themselves. Because threes have a knack for walking into a room and they know exactly who they need to be. They know exactly what image they need to present for that scenario. And that adaptability can be a great thing, but it can also be a horrible thing. You've got to learn that there's a limit to your ability. There will always be somebody better than you, somebody more successful, somebody more beautiful, somebody with more money, somebody more skilled. And when a three is not healthy, they cannot handle this. It does them in. So they need to be aware of not connecting their identity solely to their successes or failures. They have to learn that they can do their best without having to be the best. They need to learn to stop and celebrate success instead of rushing on to the next goal. The bottom line for a three is that no amount of earthly success can satisfy you. But like we said, the good news is God's love can't be earned. It's already yours. For fours under stress, they're normally aloof and they become suddenly clingy and over-involved. They can also become withdrawn, moody, depressed, and self-pitying. Their red flag is jealousy because they see others as more unique than they are. They're always asking, was that experience that I created different? Was what I brought to the table meaningful? Was it unique? Was it valuable? And they long to hear, you are loved for exactly who you are, and who you truly are is significant and unique. You don't have to manufacture that. Because unhealthy fours tend to focus on what they're missing. They always feel like they're lacking that difference, that uniqueness. And so sometimes they'll try to manufacture that. They'll try to come up with ways to be different from the crowd. And they can sometimes overindulge their desire to be different. Fours tend to find their identity in their feelings. But I mean, we're a bunch of women and we know about feelings, right? And they are here one minute and gone the next. And they're not very reliable. Fours can become temperamental or even highly emotional, swinging from high highs down to low lows. And so for fours to grow in security, they need to become more objective and disciplined. They need to let go of that belief that they're missing something that others have and that there's something wrong with them. Their healing attitude says, I am enough and I'm beautiful just as I am. And their mindset for growing into a healthier place says, it's okay to be ordinary. Not every single thing I do has to be the most unique. Not every single thing I have has to be different than everybody else. They have to remember that feelings aren't facts. And while our emotions can sometimes give us insight, they don't always give us accurate information about the motivations and intentions of others, especially. So fours have to anchor themselves to something that's more objective. And they have to learn to feel their emotions and to ride that wave without being governed by their emotions. So a good thing for fours to remember is feel your emotions, but follow your faith. And then fours have to be careful that they don't get in the habit of unloading their emotions on others. Because for us ones, that gets old real fast. It's helpful for fours to set up routines and even goals rather than waiting around for inspiration to strike. But when fours are healthy, they make incredible creative contributions to the real world around them rather than just keeping all those ideas in their heads. Fours, you need to learn how to give yourself grace along the journey. Don't be so hard on yourself. You're enough just as you are. Because that's the way that God created you. Number five, typically a deeply focused five suddenly becomes hyperactive and scattered. They're stubborn, distant, cynical, stingy, and their red flag is detaching and retreating into their minds. They're always asking, was that accurate? And deep and indicative of my expertise. And they long to hear that their needs are not a problem. Fives feel that they lack inner resources and that too much interaction with the world around them could lead to this catastrophic depletion, that it could take all their energy, it could expend them completely. And so they tend to hoard those resources, including their energy, and they ration them out very carefully. And so what that looks like to people on the outside is they retreat and detach into their minds, into their mental worlds. And so you may have that friend who engages with the group, maybe goes out to dinner with you every once in a while, and then, like, you can't get her to answer her phone. She will not text you back. You cannot get in touch with her. She might have died. She's just a five. She's just a five. She's recovering. She's regrouping. She's re-energizing. Fives just don't have a lot of energy to give. They can engage, but then they just disappear. Fives really fear that their skills and knowledge are insufficient. And so instead of engaging in the world, they withdraw from it, and they manage that fear by gathering information and knowledge deeper and more, and they have to know more, and they will substitute that knowledge for experience. To them, learning about something is almost as good as going and doing it. And they place a high value on privacy. Relationships and being known feels very risky to a five. So these detached fives can move to a better place and become more self-confident and more decisive when they let go of the belief that they must keep the world at arm's length. They've got to not engage too much. Their healing attitude says, I actually will find fulfillment when I connect with others. And I have something to offer. Their mindset for growth says, it's okay to love wholeheartedly. You're not going to run out. I know it feels like it, but you're not. They've got to learn to reach out to others and press into community in order to be healthy. And that feels so risky for them. They must recognize the fear that they're trying to avoid by continuing to learn more and shore up their knowledge and their skills. Because they value that mastery. They value competency. The last thing they want to do is go out and go rock climbing with you and not know how to do something. But they've got to realize that it's okay to participate even if they don't know all the details, even if they don't know all the answers. Because, I mean, whether you know it or not, you actually have to go rock climbing to learn how to do it right. You know? I mean, you can read about it all day long, but it's one thing to read about something and to do it. So fives need to realize that letting the world and others in does not mean that they're going to lose themselves. The six under stress, they're normally dutiful, but they become competitive and arrogant, paranoid, defensive, self-defeating many times, and super suspicious. Their red flag is that they're looking for a sure thing. Something that's guaranteed to be without risk and without danger, because remember, they're motivated by a fear of fear. And so what they're always asking themselves is, did that create safety? Did that create security for me and for those around me? And they long to hear, you are safe. Similar to ones that have that inner critic running in their mind that we talked about, sixes have an inner committee. Okay, they don't have one voice. They got a bunch of voices. And sixes are actually usually really insightful, but the problem is they don't have confidence in their own judgment. They don't have confidence in their own insight, and so they look outside themselves for guidance. Now, combine that with the fact that sixes tend to be worst-case thinkers, and somebody needs to bring some Valium, because we got a lot of anxiety going on here. Because they don't trust themselves, then they look outside and they get all these competing opinions of what they should do, all these competing voices, and they don't know what to trust. They can see all these what-ifs, but they don't have the confidence in what to do about it. Now, six is a little bit special because there are kind of two subtypes under a six. They're both driven by fear, but they respond to it differently. There's a phobic six, and they're going to run from that fear. It's that flight response. Then there's the counterphobic six, still driven by fear, but what that brings out in them is that fight response. So sixes who are fearful can move to a healthier place where they become more relaxed and optimistic. They let go of the belief that they must rely on something or someone outside themselves for security. And their healing attitude says, I'm safe because God is with me and I can trust him. And their mindset for growth says, it's okay to trust. It's okay to trust myself, and it's okay to trust those around me. In order to become healthier, sixes have to recognize how much time they spend considering the what-ifs of the future. When they achieve something, or when the what-if doesn't turn out to be the absolute world-ending catastrophe that they thought it was going to be, they need to consciously realize that. They need to consciously realize that they do have trustworthy abilities. They are capable. They are competent. And not all of those what-ifs are going to come to pass. Fear will probably always be present for them, but they need to learn when it's overactive, when it's irrational. It's easy for a lot of us to minimize the fear that a six feels. But it's way more helpful for us if you're in a relationship with a six to explore that fear with them. Because when you downplay their fear and you discredit it, you know what that says to them? Well, I can't trust that person. So the best thing you can do with a six is be honest with them, even if the truth is a little bit ugly. And then walk out those fears with them. Walk to the end of that what-if scenario. Well, what if that happens? Okay, well, what if the next step happens? Get all the way to the end. Help them think it through. Help them make a plan. And that will build their trust in themselves and also in you. Because they are so insightful, sixes can make excellent decisions, and they can move forward. They're going to need extra time. And so if you're a six, you need to realize it's going to be real hard for you to make fast decisions. The people around you need to realize they need to give you some time to make decisions. But you can do it. Trust yourself. Seven is the enthusiast, and under stress, these usually kind of scattered sevens become perfectionistic and critical. Impulsive, escapist, cynical. And their red flag says, if I could just get that. If I could just experience that. They're not in the present, and they're always looking for the next or better thing. They're always asking in a situation, did people get it and can we move on? I'm tired of talking about this. That's a seven. But really what they long to hear is you will be taken care of. Sevens can become restless, feeling like there's always something just a little bit better out there. Yeah, I got this, but it didn't quite satisfy me. I think I've got to have the next thing. They never quite feel that longing they feel, which keeps them looking to the next thing and the next thing and the next. Sevens like to feel good. They like to get what they want. And they seek to avoid boredom and pain and negative feelings. They want their freedom. They don't want too many demands or responsibilities placed on them. And they typically live at a fast pace, moving from one thing to the next. And it can lead to them becoming this unhealthy consumer of life who can be hyper and scattered and impulsive. Always having a focus on what's next, what's next. And so a major problem for our sevens is that our culture feeds this. We don't do one thing at a time anymore. We're always in a hurry. We don't spend much time staying here in this place because we're thinking about we're going to be late to the next place. And so that's a major issue for sevens, to battle against that culture. To become more secure, these impulsive sevens become more focused and deep when they let go of the belief that they require things or experiences to be fulfilled. And their healing attitude allows them to say, God is my satisfaction. And he is present even in suffering. And their mindset for growth says it's okay to stay in the moment, even if it means pain. Sevens have got to realize when they're shortchanging themselves by moving so quickly from one thing to the next. And instead of focusing on what's next with their eyes kind of always on the horizon, they need to learn to be where their feet are. They've got to learn to be in that moment and find the joy in everyday, ordinary circumstances instead of always looking for the next adventure, the next purchase. Reflection is a huge key for contentment for sevens. They tend to be so future-oriented that they can forget God's faithfulness to them in the past. So sevens need to build in some time to routinely stop and say, God, thank you for what you've done in the past. Thank you for how you've shown yourself in my life. And in relationships, sevens have to learn to engage with the negative. You can't always just ignore the conflict or the hard situation. Life isn't just a constant, exciting party. There are hard days, and sometimes there are just boring days. Right? Number eight, eights are usually self-confident, but when they get under stress, they become secretive and fearful, controlling, domineering, excessive, and confrontational. Their red flag is when they start fighting for self-sufficiency and they begin to fear dependence. And they're always asking, did I affect this problem or these people? What they long to hear is, you will not be betrayed. Eights feel like they have to really struggle and strain to make things happen. But they believe that they can make it happen. They can try hard enough and they can actually make it happen. And if that means they run over you in the process, you better step aside because they're coming. Because that can lead to them being dominating and demanding of others, and demanding that others do what they say, that they follow the eight's lead, because they fear being controlled. And so in their fear of being controlled, they try to make others fearful of them. But they rarely realize the effect that they have on other people. Eights can come across as very abrasive, very strong, very insensitive, but they don't usually realize that. They can become these threatening bullies who are aggressive and domineering. They want to be strong and they want to be in control. But they also feel like they have to protect themselves. And that's what's driving a lot of this behavior. It leads them to feeling like they have to toughen up and gather up plenty of resources in order to be secure. Now, some eights have a history of hurt in their childhood. I was listening to Jo Saxton, if you know who she is, a speaker and author, and she's an eight. And she talks about when she was a child bouncing around from foster home to foster home. And she said, I remember a specific time sitting on these steps when I decided nobody else is going to hurt me. And she built a wall. And from that point on, she kept everybody out. Now, I want to be clear, childhood trauma doesn't cause an eight to be an eight, and not everybody who has a childhood trauma is an eight. But when you combine that trauma and that inborn personality, they form a very, very powerful force. And it causes them to believe in this lie which says, I can't trust anyone. Eights have a really hard time trusting other people. And so when they move to a healthier place, these controlling eights become more empathetic and open. They let go of the belief that they must always be in control of their environment. And their healing attitude says, I need to be willing to let my guard down, because that is when I can experience love. And their mindset for growing to a healthier place says, it's okay to be vulnerable. For an eight to be healthy, they have to learn how to do this. They have to learn how to let their guard down. They can't deny their feelings. They many times will enjoy kind of this shallow camaraderie of friends, but they've got to find a couple of people that they can trust and open up to. Eights sometimes live expecting rejection. But to be healthy, they must learn that, ironically, letting that guard down and trusting other people can lead to deeper relationship. Eights also need to realize how they're affecting others. They're not good at reading people. They tend to be aggressive, and that works for some people. But others are going to kind of do this. They're going to kind of shrink back. They're going to get quiet, and eights need to learn to recognize that and adjust. Adjust their intensity a little bit. Dial it back a little bit. Eights have the most energy of any number on the Enneagram. And so it's helpful for eights to have an outlet for that passion and intensity. Whether that's work or a place to volunteer, a place to be involved, to pour some of that energy into so that your closest relationships, your husband, your coworkers, your roommates, your best friends don't have to shoulder all of that energy alone. That can be a lot, especially if you're friends with a five. Okay? Number 9, the peacemaker. While they're normally complacent and steady, unhealthy nines become anxious and worried. They'll check out. They're unassertive. They're stubborn. And their red flag is going along to get along. What they're always asking is, did I cause conflict? And what they really need to hear is, your presence matters. Nines get off track not because of what they do, like all the other numbers, but because of what they don't do. Nines are the only number that has both internal boundaries and external boundaries. They seek internal peace and external peace, and they avoid conflict at all costs. And so what that looks like is they try to keep in anything that might cause conflict, thoughts, feelings, words, and they try to keep out anything that might rob their peace, stress, external conflict, harsh opinions of other people, all those things they just push away. Nines may avoid and deny issues that need to be dealt with because of the stress associated with it. So nines may not let their stress show. You may not really know how they're feeling. Sometimes they're going to become overly accommodating to avoid conflict. Or sometimes they'll try to be a little sneaky about it and they'll kind of become passive aggressive. And then if there's still tension and conflict, they're probably just going to check out. Nines many times judge their value on how everyone else around them is getting along. And because of this, nines lose touch with their own feelings and their own desires. And if you ask a nine for their opinion, whether it's, where do you want to go to dinner? What'd you think about that movie? Where do you want to go on vacation? You know what they're going to say? I don't know. I don't care. Wherever you want to go. And darn, people like to have them around. But sometimes to others, this can look like laziness or apathy. So we have to be careful with nines. Unhealthy nines get stuck. They can be paralyzed by indecision, trying to maintain that internal and external peace, and they can be professional procrastinators. Checked out nines, when they become healthy, they become more self-aware and confident and engaged in the world. They let go of the belief that their participation is unimportant, that they don't matter. And their healing attitude says, I do matter. And some conflict in life is inevitable. And I can face it with confidence. Their mindset for growth says it's okay to say no, and it's okay to voice my thoughts and opinions. Nines need to know they do matter. They have an impact on those around them. They need to realize and recognize their own views and preferences instead of going along with everyone else. They've got to realize that they bring this amazing, calm, steady, healing presence to those around them, but that many times they check out instead of relating to those around them. They've got to be able to express their own needs and their thoughts and their feelings. Nines, one thing you need to learn to do is learn to make declarative statements. I think, I feel, I want. It's hard. No, I don't want to. It's really hard for nine. So we need to encourage nines to find and develop their interests and their skills, and we need to appreciate them for their profound ability of letting others be who they are. They are so good at inclusion. They are so good at accepting others. without judgment and without expectation, and they're able to see and empathize with the perspectives of everyone in the room. They're great mediators. Whew, how you doing? Making progress? It's a lot of information, but I hope it's becoming clearer. And I just really want to encourage you as you process this, especially if you're still really unsure of your type. Look back from session one. Eliminate the ones that you know you're not. And once you find two or three that you think might be who you are, then go to session two and look at how each of those types behaves under stress. And think about yourself, what do I do when I'm stressed? Which one of these fits? And if you still aren't sure, that's okay. I would love to help you process. You can come find me. You can call the church. Ask for Catherine. Just kidding. Just kidding. She knows how to get a hold of me. She can pass it on. But really, the best thing you can do is just sit with this for a while. It's kind of like buying a new mattress. How many people have successfully bought a mattress, laying on the mattress for 30 seconds in the mattress store? It takes a while, right? You got to sleep on it for a little while to figure it out. Now, if you're interested in learning more, we've got a couple of resources listed for you, but I'd like to mention a couple more that you might want to jot down. If you want to take a test, if you're completely lost, or you're just dying to see what the test says, I would recommend you use one of two things. There is an app and a website called Enea App, E-N-N-E-A App. You can go to their website or you can download the app. It's free. The other place that has a free assessment that I feel like is fairly accurate is yourenneagramcoach.com. That's listed in your booklet. That's a site by a lady named Beth McCord. Beth does a great job of teaching the Enneagram through a gospel lens. She has some paid online classes available on her website, but I would really encourage you just to jump on and follow her on social media. She puts a ton of stuff on Instagram and Facebook for free that's really helpful. The Path Between Us is a book written by Suzanne Stabile. It's an excellent resource when it comes to the Enneagram and relationship. If you're looking for a way to maybe engage this information with a group, maybe you've got a group of coworkers or a group of friends that you'd like to talk about this regularly with, I would really recommend a Path Between Us study guide. You don't have to buy the regular book. You can just buy the study guide. It has some great discussion questions in it. Suzanne also has a podcast called The Enneagram Journey. You can find Beth McCord as a guest on numerous podcasts as well. Another book that I'd recommend is called Self to Lose, Self to Find by a lady named Marilyn Vancil, V-A-N-C-I-L. And that is a great biblical perspective on the Enneagram. That's an excellent book as well. I know tonight is a lot of information, and you may be feeling a little bit like I just sprayed you in the face with a fire hose, and I'm sorry about that. But I want to close with this question of now what? What do we do from here with all this information? First, I want to remind us to just focus first on our own selves. Take your time and process this information before you try to begin to process someone else's personality. It's a lot. It's a lot. Second, don't feel guilt or shame as you process this material. It's going to be there. But use it to push yourself to take the next step towards health. And then I really want to encourage you to find a community to process with. It is unbelievably helpful to have someone help you identify things that they see in you, positive and negative. And if you're not sure how to do that, please come find me, find Catherine. We would love to help you plug in somewhere. We would love to help you figure out how to find a community that you can process with. And then finally, as you see your areas of brokenness, just invite God into those. And as you see the beauty in the way He has designed you, lean in and just ask him how you can use that for his glory. Because that, to me, is the greatest benefit of the Enneagram. Let me close with a quick word of prayer, and then Catherine will be up to dismiss us. God, I thank you for tonight, and I just thank you for our designs. I thank you that you do not make mistakes. It's so easy for us, from our point of view, to see what's wrong with us, God, and how we need to be better and how we need to change. I pray that tonight would be that mirror that would show us the things that need to change, but God, that we would look to you and your power in order to actually make the change. God, we love you and praise you. I thank you for each one of these women. Would you just bless them as they go forth from here? In Jesus' name, amen.